This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 19th of October 2018. This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 19th of October 2018. And welcome to our people who are in the studio now. We've got extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle, which this week have been edited by Sheila Shepherd, Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are Winchester must grow or wither on the vine, rare zebra born at Marwell Zoo, and 100 lay people take up new roles within the church. So may I have the story behind the first headline, please? Heather.
Winchester must grow or wither on the vine, Andrew Napier writes. The new boss of Winchester Business Improvement District, which we all know as BID, has been getting to know his new city. But one thing Richard Sutherland is certain of is that Winchester cannot afford to stay still, or it will wither on the vine. Mr. Sutherland believes it is not an option for the city to rest on its laurels. Addressing the high number of public sector jobs in the city, Mr. Sutherland said, "There is no doubt if the city is to survive and thrive, there is a rebalancing needed here. We are currently having 50% of employment in the public sector. We need a more balanced economy, and the city needs to grow. I'm super optimistic. These are issues that can be resolved, and we shouldn't shy away from wanting to grow. If we don't, we will wither on the vine. We have to highlight quality schemes that people are proud of, that add to the long-term value of the city." He was speaking as the City Council is involved with three major projects: Station Approach, the Sports Centre at Bar End, and the Central Winchester Regeneration, otherwise known as Silver Hill 2. It is the hottest of hot potatoes, with many people disagreeing that the city needs to grow, but should concentrate instead on promoting its heritage and tourism. A key part of Station Approach is to build high-quality offices to attract private firms into the city. The Chronicle recently reported that maybe 1,000 jobs could come with redevelopment around the station. Another issue is the High Street. The problems have been shown recently by the closure of Picon and the near collapse of Patisserie Valerie. Mr. Sutherland is working on a handful of new initiatives that the BID plans to launch over the next 6 months to ensure the High Street continues to thrive and does not turn into housing or offices, but remains a vital social meeting place. There's actually a picture of the High Street with a smiling photograph of Mr. Sutherland inset, and it must be Christmas or something because that High Street is absolutely crammed with people. You couldn't move. Winchester does have an issue with the balance between retail and food and beverage. It is one we need to address. If Winchester is to thrive, it needs to have both offerings at the top of their game. We do need more retail in town in order to make sure we don't become a place where people dash in for a couple of hours, grab a drink and disappear. We have to have an element of being a shopping destination as well. Replacing Catherine Turnus, Mr. Sutherland says he is optimistic about the future. "The joy of the challenge is to find a way forward and put the past behind us. It is a vital period for the city, and certainly getting it right is not an easy job, and none of us has a crystal ball to see what the future holds. It is a complicated job, but I have great optimism we will find a solution to cope with the future demands." It is too pessimistic to say retail is dying. People are social animals and enjoy the interaction of being in a bustling city centre, he says. Mr. Sutherland previously worked for Marketing Birmingham in the West Midlands. He has some links with the area, having spent part of his teenage years living in Meonstoke in the Meon Valley. I'm loving every minute of it. It is fun, interesting, and a great learning experience. It's a great opportunity here to be part of the Winchester team and help the city move on into the next stage of its development. Part of the challenge is to help glue all the disparate interests together and come out with a solution that is good for the city. With a central Winchester regeneration on the cards, Mr. Sutherland sees this as an opportunity for retail. We have an opportunity to bring in more retail. We can't force them, but we can make it more attractive to come here. The BID is very aware that businesses are struggling in the current climate, with the winds of change blowing through the economy. I'm sure I haven't been mistaken in coming here. What a wonderful place it is to live and work in. I'm privileged to have the opportunity to play a small part in the city's future. I hope to have an open door, to be available for people in the city to come and talk, to understand different viewpoints, and work with everybody.
And for the second headline story, it's over to you, Noel.
Rare zebra born at Marwell Zoo. Marwell Zoo has welcomed an endangered new addition to its family of zebras. The gravy zebra was born at the zoo near Coldon Common last week after its mother Imogen gave birth to the female foal in the Wild Explorers exhibit. Keepers say both mother and yet-to-be-named foal are doing very well. The second arrival takes the total number of gravy zebras at the zoo to 8 and is the first foal to be fathered by resident stallion Fonzie. Ian Goodwin, animal collection manager at the zoo, said, "Imogen is looking after her foal very well. It's great to watch her exploring her new surroundings at Wild Explorers, where we highlight the conservation work we carry out in Africa. Our new arrival is a very important and welcome addition to the endangered species breeding programme." In the late 1970s, there were 15,000 gravy zebra in the wild. Today, there are estimated to be about 2,800 remaining. The gravy zebra has suffered one of the most drastic population declines of any African mammal due to climate change, habitat loss, and competition with increasing livestock numbers. Ian added, "Since 2003, Marwell Wildlife has been working with partners in northern Kenya to conserve gravy zebra. We employ a team of conservation biologists and scouts who work in the field, and they have been instrumental in helping to create a national conservation strategy for the species. Marwell also manages the International Stud Book and European Ex Situ Programme for gravy zebra. A gravy zebra can stand within just 1 hour of its birth, and they can only be found in the semi-arid bushland of Ethiopia and northern Kenya. And, of course, at Marwell, there's a wonderful picture of the mother and daughter standing there, the mother looking very proud of her offspring."
And Jane's got the third headline story,
which is 100 lay people take up new roles within church. The Bishop of Winchester gave licence to 10 new licensed lay ministers and workers this weekend at Winchester Cathedral. Bishop Tim Dakin also commissioned 102 new members of the Bishop's Commission for Mission at the service. Lay ministers are non-qualified people who take on leadership roles in ministry in the Church of England. The Bishop's Commission for Mission was created and established in the Diocese of Winchester in 2016. Since then, more than 160 people have taken part. The three-month programme trains participants to play a part in serving their local society and share the passion for their religion. The new ministers and members were licensed in a packed service at the Winchester Cathedral, where friends and families supported the candidates launching into their new roles. And this is accompanied by a picture of Bishop Tim Dakin and Bishop David Williams and Dean Catherine Ogle standing in front of the beautiful main door of the cathedral with huge numbers of new members all looking very happy about the situation.
And that concludes the headline stories. We're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, question and answer my Winchester, editorial comment, first person, Belgarum diary, and letter from Westminster. And we'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Boswell, Lillian Phyllis Boswell, peacefully aged at 91. Cruz, Barbara Joan Cruz, peacefully aged 91. Emmett, Molly Emmett, peacefully at Southampton General Hospital, aged 92. Gray, Eleanor Rose Silk Gray, peacefully at home, aged 90. Hubbard, Winifred Hubbard, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. King, Simon King, suddenly, and he was in fact 52. Kinsley, Harold Curley Kinsley, peacefully surrounded by his family, aged 74. Lucas, Marge Lucas, nay Ship, died peacefully, aged 95. Moore, David Leonard ISM Moore, formerly of Winchester, aged 88. Mould, Jean Mould, peacefully. Mustill, Margaret Mustill, peacefully in hospital, aged 87. And Southwood, Hannah Elizabeth Betty Southwood, formerly of Alsford, and she passed away in Stratford-upon-Avon. And now Jane's got a Christian comment.
And Christian comment this week is saying yes. On Saturday night, we had my father-in-law staying, and we had a family film night. We watched The 22nd of July by Paul Greengrass, which depicts the Norwegian massacre of young people on a holiday camp in 2011. The terrorist, Anders Breivik, was a lone wolf and first set off a bomb in a van near the Prime Minister's office, killing 8 people, and went on to take the lives of 69 young people on an island before giving himself up. The film depicts the story of one young man coming to terms with his life-changing injuries until he finally faces the accused in court and is able to tell his story. Breivik is completely unrepentant fascist, intolerant of immigration, and intent on overthrowing the law and order of Western democracy. He appoints a reluctant lawyer to defend his case, who himself suffers intimidation and threats on his life. The film ends with Breivik accepting his life sentence in solitary confinement and offering his hand to the lawyer, asking if he will visit him in prison. The lawyer refuses to shake and says, "No, I don't think so. Justice is served." After the credits rolled, my son was struggling to understand why the lawyer had to take the case, using his knowledge of the law to defend Breivik to the best of his ability, even though he admitted guilt. I tried to explain that even in cases where emotions run high, the rule of law must prevail in order for trust in society to remain. Violence happens when that trust is lost. Contrast that with the gathering in the cathedral on Sunday morning. Law Sunday gathers judges, barristers and lawyers, high sheriffs and under-sheriffs, the chief constable, mayors and leaders of our councils from across the county. It was too wet to go outside the cathedral to titillate the tourists, but the processions provide a spectacle of gowns, cloaks, copes, hats, stockings, wigs and garters that you're more likely to see in a period drama than modern England. It was a celebration of the traditional rule of law in our land. In her address, Lady Justice Hallett, a judge in the Court of Appeal, discussed the role of forgiveness in the modern justice system. She pointed out that judges are always seeking to give consistent and fair judgments in accordance with the law of the land. For centuries, the Christian faith has influenced the rule of law in this nation. What the justice system cannot do is to forgive. Only the victims of crime can forgive those who have caused them injury and hurt. It is easier to forgive when the offender says they are sorry, but even if the offender is unrepentant, very often the only way to wholeness and healing is for the victim to forgive. It can be impossibly difficult to do that. Christian faith is based on Jesus. He was sentenced to death for a crime he didn't commit, yet he forgave those responsible for the unjust system that killed him. We are more able to forgive others when we recognise that we also need forgiveness. Jesus says yes to us, even when we don't deserve it. And that was from Reverend Canon Mark Collinson, Canon Principal of Winchester Cathedral.
And we'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. There are 7 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
Remembering the diver and the sculptor. So it's very good to know that events are taking place to commemorate the centenary of William Walker, the diver whose amazing work and dedication to saving Winchester Cathedral are to be celebrated. The story of the 3 different sculptures of William Walker is a fascinating one. 2 sculptures are in the cathedral, 1 is outside. I'm sure many of your readers are familiar with the portrait sculpture of William Walker that stands by the entrance to the cathedral refectory. I do hope that the celebrations will provide an opportunity for everyone to visit this portrait sculpture. It was made by Norman Pierce, an eminent local sculptor who was in extensive contact with William Walker's family, to ensure that there was a likeness of the real William Walker in Winchester Cathedral. The sculpture was funded by the Professional Diving Association in memory of one of their most famous members, and Norman Pierce himself was well known to many Wintonians as an inspiring teacher and deserves recognition. Angela Seeley, Park Road, Winchester.
To you, Noel, for the second letter.
Eileen Berry writes about what she calls a precious asset. Sir, because I am a supporter of anything that will enhance Winchester, keeping our history intact where we can and rebuilding buildings that are compatible and in sympathy with what is already here is so important. I had an occasion to stand up at the top of the High Street by the Law Courts and was going to have a coffee, and I looked down the High Street and the skyline. I thought it was one of the most beautiful living museums and has been there virtually untouched for over 1,000 years. I could see to the bottom of the hill, the backdrop, and I felt pride that it is almost a monument, but a living, breathing monument. The one thing that I would love people to understand is that the tourism that is coming in threefold see it as I saw it. It has its imperfections, we know that. We know that the pavements need doing, we know that we want to clean it up, and we should. All the businesses that rely on tourism, remember that you are the custodian of your building and the outside of your building. If there is a waste outside your premises, the old-fashioned way, a bucket of hot water to clean it away early in the morning. The one thing that is absolutely certain, the High Street can never be changed. Thank goodness that that is the case, because without that beautiful ancient street and its skyline, there would be no Winchester. That means our heritage, King Alfred, the cathedral, and everything else from Anglo-Saxon history. There would be nothing without the continuation of this magnificent ancient High Street. We have to comment on the success of the cathedral too, also a working, breathing museum that has enhanced this city and attracted thousands of people. Their success is something that we should be emulating. We hope that the regeneration of the city centre can be a living, breathing, working museum also. Anything less would be letting ourselves down. So let's embrace what we have and support all that will enhance it. Eileen Berry, Council of St Barnabas Ward, Priorsdean Road, Hestock.
Over to you, Jane.
And Roger Stevens writes, arriving where? Sir, Mr Hargreaves, Chronicle Letters, October the 11th, refers to Winchester's wealthy, educated elite who apparently don't understand the basics of British democracy, and suggests that, quote, Britons voted with a substantial mandate to leave. On the contrary, Winchester's wealthy, educated elite know that only 37% of the electorate voted to leave in a grossly compromised referendum, and therefore no valid mandate for Brexit exists. Everybody shares some understanding of what leave means, but there is no consensus whatsoever on the meaning of arrive. It has been 2.5 years since the referendum, and with barely 6 months to go, there is some impasse while the Brexiteers argue amongst themselves like medieval clerics about the true meaning of Brexit. Astonishingly, amidst this chaos, some Brexiteers can find the time to engage in displacement activities, such as whining about the powerless Remainers and regaling us with the events that took place in 2005. The time for whining, bickering and excuses is long over. Brexiteers, you started this. This is your show and you are in charge. You need to finish it. And that was from Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
Keep the trees, writes Terry Gould. Sir, your excellent Belgarum piece reported on current Central Winchester regeneration proposals to open up a view of the cathedral by removing the 8 mature apple trees in Middle Brook Street. These also propose relocating the bus station on the Middle Brook car park. Perhaps the City Council and JTP, the designers of the supplementary development plan, should rethink this? The cathedral is perfectly visible alongside the trees, and it will be even more so from the end of October until April, when they lose their leaves. These trees, lovely in their own right, help to soften the ungainly appearance of the Brook Centre and the buildings on the other side of the street. They also provide a good screen in hot summer days. The council should instead relocate the bus station on the site of the Friars Gate car park, now an even greater eyesore than the multi-storey version. Then bus users would not need to cross the busy Friars Gate Road to get to it. They could stroll through King's Walk, use the existing cafe, and safely get on their bus. This would be much safer and would increase footfall for the shops there. New arrivals to Winchester coming the other way would come out of King's Walk, and if they looked left, they would have an unobstructed view of the cathedral. Architect's mission accomplished, and some trees saved. Trees must form a very important part of the regeneration of Central Winchester, so let's plant more of them, not cut them down. Terry Gould, Fairfield Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Jill Henbest writes about rooks and crows. Sir, reference Alice Ashworth's article about the difference between crows and rooks, Chronicle, Country Matters, October the 4th. My dad used to say, if you see lots of crows, they're probably rooks. And if you see one rook, it's probably a crow. And while we're on the subject of identifying species, do you know the difference between a weasel and a stoat? A weasel is weaselly recognised, and a stoat is stoatily different. Jill Henbest, Woodland Drive, Twyford Moors.
And here we have Zero for Housing by Martin Wicks. Sir, we are all very aware of the need for affordable housing and sustainable development and the issue that is causing, from planning to local objection. This week's report on climate change has once again awakened the prospect of serious risks if genuine change is not addressed. Surely it's time to take a lead and demand that all future housing development in the region must support zero emissions, force developers to innovate and use their huge margins to genuinely create properties that are fit for the 21st century. And that was from Martin Wick, South Downs, Old Alsford.
Spiky hedges, writes G.N. Barrett. Sir, if your vehicle has sharp or jagged edges or something similar, it is deemed unroadworthy, a danger to the public, as if anyone is thrown from a vehicle in motion, they could sustain life-threatening injuries. So look at the way the hedgerows are hacked to bits. There are very serious points and spikes, very much like stakes. Surely this is as dangerous to the public as a vehicle could be. G.N. Barrett, Nicholson Place, Alsford.
And that's the end of all the letters to the editor. Thank you very much to all of our contributors. And now it's time for your say. Some MPs are reporting constituents at their surgeries to the immigration authorities. We asked whether that is the right thing to do. And Noel has the answers.
Yes, I've got answers from 4 different people. Gordon Jaques, 83, retired from Winchester, said MPs are only interested in themselves and getting further ahead. They cut people off from their families. And Anna Sasso, 31, staff nurse of Staple Gardens, Winchester, said, I don't really know, as I've never seen MPs. I never had a problem, so I don't know. Jerry Butler, 80, retired of Eastgate Street, Winchester, said, it's OK, someone's got to do it, so it's good. And Abbas Farham, 33, doctor of High Street, Winchester, said, they should find some way to help. They shouldn't just report them.
Now we're going back through the mists of time through our dusty old files for historical news items from our files, and we'll start with 25 Years Ago, read by Jane.
And 25 Years Ago was Friday, October the 15th, 1993. Two items here. Tesco is willing to pay £200,000 for playing fields as part of the package for building a superstore on the site which the company owns at Bar End, Winchester. Sir Graham Eyre, QC for Tesco, said on Tuesday, it is right my client should foot the bill, which should reflect loss of a particular pitch or pitches on the application site. In the state of uncertainty created by the local plan, we are not in a position sensibly to identify provision. My client will bear the cost up to X number of pitches at any location that is identified as open space to the extent of £200,000. If the planning authority was prepared to identify an area, we might be able to pursue the matter on a more definitive basis, Sir Graham added. He was giving the opening address at an appeal held in St John's Rooms in the Broadway, Winchester. The appeal by Tesco was against the failure of the City Council to determine a planning application for the development of a superstore and associated parking and petrol station at the site of Bar End Road. And the second item from 1993 is fears that Hampshire taxpayers could have to foot the bill for local government reorganisation has prompted Winchester City Council to write a letter to the Environment Secretary to demand the truth. Patrick Davies, a Labour councillor, said the DOE was refusing to confirm or deny reports that residents could be hit with significant increases to their council tax bills to pay for the transitional cost of setting up new local authorities. Members of the Policy and Finance Subcommittee agreed on Wednesday that letters should be sent to John Gummer, the Winchester and Alton MP Jerry Malone, and Junior Minister Peter Lloyd, MP for Fareham. Mr Davies said residents would suddenly take an interest in the local government review if they knew they'd have to pay for changes. He said national press reports concerning a leaked DOE memorandum had indicated an increase of up to £100 a year for each person.
Heather, please can you take us back 50 years ago?
Yes, indeed. To Saturday, October the 19th, 1968. After a century of training women to become nurses, the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, is to offer a course to young men wishing to become state registered nurses. It was disclosed by the matron, Miss Jacqueline Morgan, on Saturday last week. She was speaking at the presentation of certificates and badges to state registered and state enrolled nurses trained at the Winchester hospitals. Since the Nursing Act of 1919, the hospital has offered training leading to state registered nurse. We are to offer a 3-year course to young men. Today they can be assured of a worthwhile career structure, she said. Next year the maternity unit, with 90 beds, was due to be completed, while the building of the new hospital would still be in progress. And secondly, hobbies ranging from bell ringing to model aircraft construction were represented at an exhibition in the Guildhall, Winchester, on Friday and Saturday of last week. The exhibition, organised by the Rotary Club of Winchester, was opened by the Mayor, Councillor Stuart Green. Young people often asked what there was to do in Winchester, and yet here were more than 30 exhibitors to show that many, including the young, did things for themselves by the beautifully constructed scale model of the Clipper, Scutty Sark, made by Mr. D. Much of Verona Road, Chandler's Ford. The cathedral bell ringers offered the opportunity to see the cathedral bells being rung, while the Winchester Lawn Tennis Club had one of the new steel tennis rackets costing £22.10 on show.
Noel's going to take us back 100 years ago.
Yes, and just one item from Saturday, October the 19th, 1918. That much feeling has been aroused in Winchester with reference to the scheme for the erection of a gatehouse, a central cross, and altering the approach to the west front of the cathedral from the southwest, where Minster Street joins Simon Street, was evidenced by the large and representative attendance at the meeting which the mayor convened at the McGuild Hall on Monday afternoon in response to a numerously signed petition. It was a dismal day as regards to the weather, being wet and cold, but every seat in the banqueting room was occupied, and many went into the gallery. It may fairly be said that all classes of citizens were represented in the audience. The mayor, Alderman Ed Meads, presided, and was accompanied to the platform by the Right Honourable the Earl of Selborne, K.G., Chairman of the Memorial Committee, Sir William W. Portal, Bart., the Dean of Winchester, Major Coddington, representing Lieutenant Colonel Westmoreland, Hampshire Depot, who was indisposed, Captain Pearson, R.N., and the Reverend R.T. Marshall, the last two named being the mover and seconder of the resolution that was voted upon.
And finally, Jane's going to take us back 200 years ago.
Which was Monday, October the 19th, 1818. Last Tuesday night, our theatre exhibited the rare phenomenon of an overflowing house. The causes concurred in producing this. It was Floyer's benefit, and Lady Rivers patronised him. The whole went off with great spirit, and the audience and Floyer seemed equally delighted. Among the pieces was Hamlet Travesty, which seemed to give universal satisfaction. We have always thought the burlesque best adapted for country theatres, on account of the great tendency which even the regular tragedy has in such places to degenerate into that style. We were therefore sorry to find Mr. Poole's admirable travesty considerably curtailed upon the occasion. We could, with much greater pleasure, have been spared one half of the melodrama of Devil's Bridge than one scene of that humorous production. The melodrama is the worst adapted of all the species of representation for a small theatre. To please the eye is the great object of the melodrama, and it is impossible to do that where both space and materials are wanting.
Back to the present, because Heather has got question and answer, My Winchester.
And this week it's Tracy Field, aged 43, who is the general manager at the Black Boy pub, Wharf Hill. And she tells us her favourite things about Winchester. What is your favourite restaurant or cafe? The Black Rat is my favourite restaurant. What is your favourite pub or bar? Well, of course, the pub that I run has got to be my favourite, the Black Boy. What is your favourite shop? I love all of the independent shops, but so many seem to have closed down. What's your favourite building? Well, my favourite building has to be the cathedral. And your favourite view? It's got to be the view across the city from the roof terrace of the Black Hole. Why or who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? Oh, King Alfred. What is Winchester's best kept secret? The black bottle. What is the best thing about Winchester? It's a friendly city with lots of history and beautiful surroundings. And the worst? The lack of support for independent businesses. If there were one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? I would love an indoor market for trades with a butcher's and a fishmonger's and so on. Describe Winchester in a sentence. Small in size, but big in stature.
This week's first person has been written by Khalid Aziz, and Noel's going to read it for us.
His headline is "The First Cuckoo on Website." Facebook is not all bad. The online group which drives the hub of the universe that is our village of St. Mary Bourne, Bourne Valley Signpost, sports some 1,300 members up and down the Bourne Valley, even allowing foreigners in from the Hurstbournes, Tarrant and Priors, and even Long Parish. It's mostly a joyous sight, veering from the whimsical, glorious photos taken of sunsets and wildlife. Recently, a kingfisher settled just long enough to be digitally captured in all its iridescence. Then there's the banal. Has anyone a use for a pile of old plastic flower pots? There are also pleas for reliable plumbers and builders. People are usually very helpful. I recently needed to get in contact with someone, and the response was virtually instant. There's security too, dodgy people selling stuff to door-to-door, or tarmackers who just happen to have half a load of leftover, which would bring your drive up a treat, are instantly posted, alerting the unwary to those unwanted intruders into our village idyll. You need to be sure of your ground. Walking the dog one April morning along one of our many bosky footpaths, I heard a cuckoo. Could this be the first of the year heralding spring? I posted on Bourne Valley's signpost only to be deflated by some clever dick who claimed to have heard one a week earlier. Still, one takes such slights in one's stride. And by and large, the Bourne Valley signpost group is a force for good. Until, that is, it gets into the hands of the keyboard warriors that seem to be permanently offended. Driving is always controversial. Don't get me wrong, I'm an assiduous speed limit observer, keeping under 30 in villages and even slower when passing schools, particularly at start and finish times. However, any minor infraction unleashes trolls who rail about mums in 4x4s driving a mere few hundred yards to get their precious cargoes to school. We all walked in my day, they say. To a certain extent, the site is self-regulating. We have at least two splendid regular counterposters who react with wit in the case of Mr. A to the more hyperbolic postings, pricking pompous bubbles, and in the case of a young JP with animated GIFs carefully chosen to reduce us to helpless tears of mirth, usually accompanied by, "It's all kicking off on Facey." The worst posting excesses are reserved for dog owners who fail to clean up after their canine charges. No one can doubt how annoying it is to have footpaths so littered with dog droppings you have to trip the light fantastic every time you venture out. Our recreational ground, home to lively cricket and football teams, the bowls team cleverly have their green baize lawn well fenced off, is in my experience pretty clear of offending piles. However, there are eyes everywhere, and woe betide you if you don't stoop after your dog has pooped. You'll be emblazoned on the signpost with a description of you and your dog. Such ire is understandable, as is the irritation with some dog owners who, having bagged the soft and yielding result of their pet's alimentary system, then hang the plastic-wrapped lump on the nearest convenient tree, hedge or fence. Who on earth do they think is going to clear it up? Much as I condemn such carryings on, it's a shame there's quite so much harshness in the tone of our otherwise helpful and socially cohesive village Facebook site. Perhaps those who write in such an outraged and violent manner should stop and consider whether they would be quite so vehement if they were speaking to someone face to face, as opposed to hiding behind their computer screens. And if you see some offending mutt, you could always go out and have a quiet word with its owner, just like in the old days. You may even make a new friend.
It's time for the editorial comment read by Jane.
Which this week is, "The city must grow or wither on the vine." Richard Sutherland, the new executive director of the Winchester Business Improvement District, has been getting to know the city. In an interview with the Hampshire Chronicle, he spoke of the need for it to be a dynamic place and not to wither on the vine, by which he means failing to grasp the opportunity presented by major schemes such as Station Approach or the Winchester Central Regeneration, better known as Silver Hill 2. The city is still, 10 years after spending cuts in the austerity era, too dependent on public sector jobs, he says. There will be many who argue, and such a stance will see the history and the environment of the city jeopardised. Instead, Winchester should utilise the strengths of its connections to the Romans, King Alfred, and the medieval kings. The city should resist attempts to expand its economic base and also its physical size. But this is impossible. Cities, towns, and villages are living things. They either grow or they decline. Winchester has done both over the centuries, but on the whole it has expanded. That expansion, including the major growth stimulated by the railways in Victorian times, did not destroy the city, it enhanced it. Such major development in the 21st century will also not destroy the city, it will enhance it. The proviso, of course, is that the development and the infrastructure must be of the highest class.
And now Heather is going to read the alternative look at the news because she's going to because she's got Belgarum Diary.
I have. Box 459, back in Cathedral Close. Box 459 is back in Cathedral Close, next to the memorial for the soldiers of the King's Royal Rifle Corps who died in the First World War. This tribute is a metal box with 459 holes, the same number as Wintonians who died between 1914 and 1918. At night, a light shines inside and comes seen through each hole. It may not be to everyone's taste, but Belgarum finds it simple and moving. The box, designed by Winchester-based AR Design Studio, was unveiled to commemorate the start of the conflict. No word yet on whether it will be put on permanent display. A close call for Winchester. The upheaval suffered by Salisbury through the nerve gas attack could have befallen Winchester, according to a new book. BBC journalist Mark Urban said the daughter of the spy, Sergei Skripal, chose Salisbury as the family home after he was freed by Russian authorities. Yulia Skripal chose the city over Winchester and Chichester, according to the Skripal files by Mark Urban. The book says Skripal was initially reluctant to believe the Russian government had tried to kill him. And despite selling secrets to MI6, he was an unashamed Russian nationalist. Urban told national newspapers he hoped the book would help people in Salisbury to understand the event. They have seen so much disruption in their lives, from blocked-off streets to worries about their kids getting contaminated. By writing this, I hope they can understand what Skripal did for the United Kingdom and why he ended up in their midst. There is an enormous amount for people in the city to be proud of. When it rains, it floods in Alsford. When it rains in Alsford, the bottom of Jacqueline's Lane by the cricketers' pub gets flooded. Resident Jim Trian sent in a photo of the latest swamping of the junction with Tichborne Down and Spring Gardens, and it's up to the middle of the car, wheels of the car that's trying to drive through it. It does look pretty big, actually. The name Spring Gardens obviously points to the potential amount of water, but townspeople say the problem has got worse in an era of council cutbacks. He emailed, "The continuous flooding there and at Prospect Road does irritate me. More assiduous clearing out of the storm drains in the southwest of the town would help." And finally, teenage complaint. Someone commits a serious criminal motoring offence that potentially endangers the public, and then complains that their privacy has been violated when the Chronicle reports the court case. They find it, quotes, disturbing that their name is on the paper without permission. As the complainant is young, we won't embarrass him further by naming them. But surely schools should be teaching something about the justice system and the concept of free speech.
It's Letter from Westminster, and Noel's going to read it.
Letter from Westminster by MP George Hollingbury. The UK being able to make trade deals is certainly one of the most important aspects of us leaving the EU. My job as Trade Policy Minister is to make sure we can enter into those agreements to boost trade as we move away from EU membership, and also ensure we can quickly incorporate the 40 trade agreements with 70 countries that exist within our EU membership and change them into new bilateral deals. There is massive appetite across the world to trade with the UK. We have world-leading goods and services other countries want, and the reception I have received as I travelled around the world and from representatives of the many countries who have visited me in London has been remarkable. Some of the trade figures we have are already very impressive with countries like the US and Japan. With regard to the US, the numbers are enormous. We have two-way trade in goods and services of over £175 billion annually, with each of us being the other's largest single supplier of services and top supplier of goods. We are also both each other's largest source of foreign investment, with nearly £1 trillion invested in each other's economies. It's clear we must strengthen these ties with big economies like the US, but also seek out more growing and increasingly important markets too, and much work is taking place right now to make this happen. Recently, I was in Taiwan, and again, I received a warm welcome. Taiwan has recently allowed the first imports of quality British pork, and when I was there, I was able to sign a joint, a joint commitment to further in-tech sectors between the two countries. I also met UK businesses in Taiwan, including the offshore wind, financial services and pharmaceutical sectors, in what is the UK's eighth largest trading partner in the Asia-Pacific region, with £5.5 billion of bilateral trade in 2017. I give these figures not to impress, but to show just what a firm foundation we have in many markets, big and small. Of course, there will be challenges, but the UK is very well placed to make the best of global trade and in a strong position to broker trade agreements quickly. And the work continues. My Department for International Trade is preparing for possible negotiations as the government considers seeking accession to the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership after we leave the EU. That's CPTPP. CPTPP is a signed but not yet enforced trade agreement between 11 countries, including Canada, Australia, Mexico and Japan. We want to hear the views of members of the public, businesses, trade experts and any other interested organisations on the CPTPP through a consultation that is open until the 26th of October. Not too much of this work makes the newspapers and very rarely the headlines, but it is happening. It is positive and will make a big difference. George Hollingbury, MP, Minister of State for Trade Policy, Department for International Trade, MP for Meon Valley.
Now, here is what's on. Well, we've got three concerts we might like to consider here. On Tuesday, we have the lunchtime recitals every week at Romsey Abbey. It's from 1:10pm to 1:50pm. You're invited to bring your lunch or a coffee and enjoy an informal half hour or so of good music. It's free, and there's a retiring collection in aid of Romsey Abbey Music. Winchester also does lunchtime recitals, also on Tuesdays. That's at 1pm. And October the 22nd, that's a Tuesday, there's the Dunev String Quartet. It's an hour-long concert, which have been running for over 20 years, bringing to the cathedral hundreds of talented musicians demonstrating skills on almost every instrument possible. All are welcome. The recitals are free, and there's a retiring collection. And also, on a Tuesday, October the 30th, but this time at 7:30pm, the Mitchell Mersch Silver Band presents 100, a concert commemorating the centenaries of the RAF and the Armistice in the United Reformed Church, Romsey. And that's in aid of the Royal British Legion Poppy Appeal. Tickets can be bought on the door, or you can get them in advance from Romsey Tourist Information Centre. And there's a telephone number for that, and that's 01794 512 987. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 19th of October at 5:55am and begins at 6:04pm. And on Wednesday the 24th of October, it ends at 7:44am and begins at 8:27pm. Now, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. We'll continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
Learning for Life. The Mayor and Mayoress visit a village school in a tour of district schools. Hambledon Primary School received a visit from the Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester. Councillor Frank Pearson and his wife Anne were given a tour around the grounds of the school before being invited into several lessons to view some of the children's work. Mayor Frank said, "I was extremely impressed with the confidence and knowledge the children showed in their maths and the high standard of handwriting, especially in the boys." He also acknowledged the strong positive relationship between the children and their teachers. Paul Davis, head teacher at Hambledon, said, "The mayor and mayoress's passion for education clearly shone through. They spent significant time with each class, actively finding out about their lesson, talking with many of the children, and taking a close interest in their work." After their time at the school, the mayor and mayoress visited the village hall in Hambledon to meet with residents. The visits were part of a tour in which the mayor and his wife will visit many of the 44 small villages across the Winchester district to meet local school children and residents.
City Advice charity is set to relocate. Citizens Advice Winchester District is preparing to relocate next year to the City Council's Colebrook Street offices. The move is part of the Council's plan to enhance its new reception area to include new cash kiosks and transforming the existing cash office into a modern office space. By enabling the co-location of services, the Council is providing easier access for its residents to speak to both the Council and the Citizen Advice, currently based in St George's Street. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, portfolio holder for professional services, said, "By providing space within the Council offices to Citizens Advice, we offer our residents the opportunity to gain support and advice on a range of issues affecting their everyday lives quickly and easily. We will enable this by transforming how our services are delivered and enhancing that offer by providing easier access by bringing public and voluntary sector services together in one location."
And here we have City Fireworks display tickets now on sale. Tickets for the annual Round Table Bonfire and Fireworks Night are now on sale. This will be the 60th anniversary of the event and is set to take place on Saturday, November the 3rd. Hundreds of people will take part in a torchlight parade through the city, starting from King Alfred's statue, before ending up at the North Walls recreational ground where the bonfire will be lit. Sam Farzam, bonfire chairman from Winchester Round Table, said, "We look forward to welcoming all the wonderful people of Winchester and surrounding areas who, along with their donations and ticket purchases, help us to raise over £65,000, which all goes to help local charities. The charities we have supported vary from a wheelchair basketball team and local schools to those children who care for others and need some light relief from their duties. As chairman of the Bonfire 2018 and on behalf of all those at Winchester Round Table, I would like to extend a big thank you in advance for the support given from all the suppliers and general public, as without you, this event wouldn't be where it is now. Several locations in the city centre, including the Tourist Information Building and the Discovery Centre, are currently selling tickets. Standard tickets cost £5 and will be on sale until the day. For more information, visit the Winchester Bonfire website." And I would just like to accompany this with another little article, which is, "Dogs can be trained to cope with fireworks." Dog owners have been invited to train their canines ahead of the fireworks season. Nearly 8 in 10, 79% dog owners in the South East have revealed their pets are distressed by loud noises, and 14% have even had to sedate their dogs, a recent survey has shown. The situation has become so bad for a fifth of owners that they have taken their pets to the vet to be treated, according to a survey of 2,000 dog owners for Adaptil by Atomic Research. But now, dog owners are urged to teach them to cope with loud noises. TV vet Kat Hensdridge said, "What many owners do not realise is that you can work with your dog to help them manage their fear. This is called desensitisation and counter-conditioning, when you expose them to firework noises but at a very low level and over time slowly increase the volume."
New mannequins help staff to tackle patients' illnesses. Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust has invested in state-of-the-art simulation mannequins. The trust, which runs the Royal Hampshire Hospitals in Winchester, purchased over £60,000 worth of new equipment. Funding came from the trustees of the Hampshire Hospitals charity. Simulation mannequins are lifelike and can be programmed to mimic real patients' illnesses, helping to train the staff in a wide range of areas. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals, said, "Simulation plays an integral role in the learning and development within the trust, and we wouldn't have been able to buy this incredible equipment without charitable funding." And there's a picture of a couple of nurses with one of the new mannequins, clearly demonstrating their use.
Advice to dog owners about attacks on livestock. Keep full control of your dog when out and about in the countryside, or you could face prosecution. That's the message from the Police County Watch Team, as it tries to educate dog owners about the risk of attacks on livestock. Police staff investigator Melody Manning said, "The worrying of livestock by dogs is a criminal offence. We would like to remind dog owners of the importance of being in full control when in the countryside and around livestock and wild animals. If an animal is injured or dies as a result of a dog attack, the animal's owner has the right to seek compensation. This can be from the dog owner or the person in control of it when the attack occurred. This can include the cost of the animal, vet bills, and the cost of removing and destroying it. Owners often voice surprise when their dog chases an animal, but this is an innate part of a dog's behaviour. The dog can also be shot by the farmer to end an attack. Police advice is, keep dogs on a lead when near livestock. If there is no livestock visible, keep dog in sight at all times and be confident it will return to you promptly on command. If you cannot be confident of this, the dog should not be off lead. Ensure your dog does not stray off the path."
And now goodbye to the temporary concrete barriers. Work has started on replacing the controversial grey concrete blocks on Winchester High Street. A JCB began removing the security barriers installed in the city last winter on Monday morning to make way for a more permanent solution. Civic chiefs are set to spend £125,000 on the new measures. According to the plans, the City Council would fund the majority of the work, spending £75,000, while Hampshire County Council would cover the remaining £50,000. As previously reported, the current barriers were installed in Winchester following worries that the city could be hit by a terrorist attack. Following the 2016 attack in Nice, as well as similar incidents in Westminster and Barcelona last year, which saw vehicles being driven at crowds of pedestrians, Councillor Linda Gemmell asked at a council meeting in November what was to stop terrorists driving a lorry past King Alfred's statue and hitting pedestrians in the Broadway and the High Street. Now the plan is to replace the temporary barriers with a permanent mix of bollards, planters and seating. And this is accompanied by a photograph of a massive JCB lifting one of those ghastly huge concrete blocks from Winchester High Street just outside Waterstones and removing it.
Kid message for play park users. Two new signs designed by Winchester school children were unveiled at Harestock Playground. They were the winning entries from a competition organised by the Littleton and Harestock Parish Council in conjunction with the Littleton and Harestock Show held in September. Entrants were asked to design a poster to encourage children to take care of the playground. The winner of the competition was Neve Gregory, aged 11, and the runner-up was Bethany Alexander, aged 5. Neve and Bethany were joined by members of the parish council and their parents at the playground during the unveiling to receive certificates and goodie bags filled with artistic supplies. And you can see one of the maps, plans, messages in the photograph that accompanies this. And it's brightly coloured and it's got lovely sort of little pictures of the various things in the park. Neve and Bethany were joined... I've read that bit. Councillor Hilary Saunders said the signs are an instructive and fun way to communicate a useful message to other children who use the playground. Their original artwork was scaled up to create two very striking and colourful permanent signs which have been placed in both the Harestock and Littleton playgrounds.
Local reporter on list of respected journos. The chief reporter of the Hampshire Chronicle is on a list of the most respected journalists in the country. Andrew Napier was among 238 names put forward to the National Council for the Training of Journalists as part of its Journalists at Work 2018 survey. Journalists were asked which living journalist they felt most embodies the values that they respect and adhere to. Nominations include well-known names from a number of broadcasters and national newspapers, including Harold Evans, former editor of the Sunday Times, Kate Adey, John Humphreys and Bob Woodward of the Washington Post. Only 20 of the 238 names work in the regional press. Mr. Napier, who's worked in Winchester since 1988, said he was surprised and delighted to be nominated. He said, "To even be on the same list as Harold Evans and Bob Woodward is a huge honour."
And here we have Village Men's Shed is open for business. The Werthers Community Shed was opened in style by Deputy Mayor Eleanor Bell, who sawed through a timber batten to allow visitors into the building. Andrew Maundrell, chairman of the Shed Committee, explained to the 30 guests that this was the culmination of a year of planning and outlined the ethos of the group with the emphasis on make or mend, repair and restore. The grand opening was to celebrate the installation of a dedicated workshop space hand-built by members using the structure that used to be known in Kingsworthy as the Veg Shed. He thanked shedders, sponsors and supporters, including councillors Jackie Porter and Jane Rutter, and members of Kingsworthy Parish Council, who provided set-up grants. Through funding from ASDA, the Royal Voluntary Service has also relocated a grant, and Helen Lyons was present to represent them. Further, St Mary's Church has given a donation, a portion of the proceeds from a spring fete. The community shed has been operating already for 12 months based at the Pax Hall, thanks to the permission of 3rd Winchester Scouts. Projects worked on include garden benches, planters from recycled wood, nest boxes. Now that the shedders have their own dedicated space, more ambitious projects may be tackled. The shed is open every Thursday from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. And this is accompanied by a picture of the newly built shed, painted in a very attractive shed of a shade of a sort of turquoisey green, and hung with flags for this celebration. And it's being opened by the Deputy Mayor, Eleanor Bell. I don't know whether that means women can join as well, but all the men there seem to be present.
The headline is "Disabled People Hit by Rise in Hate Crime." Throughout the United Kingdom, people with disabilities have been hit by a 33% increase in hate crime. Police forces, which responded to a Freedom of Information request, recorded a total of 5,342 hate crimes against people with disabilities in 2017 to 18, compared to 4,005 in the previous 12 months. The figure for Hampshire was 248, an increase of 76 on 216-17. Southampton is the second worst city in the United Kingdom for hate crime as a whole. Almost 600 incidents were reported in 2006-17, a 30% increase on the previous 12 months. Organisations have launched a campaign to tackle the issue and make the city safer for everyone. The initiative, called Love, Don't Hate, is headed by the Spectrum Centre for Independent Living, which aims to ensure people with disabilities lead lives free from discrimination. The groups aim to raise awareness, improve the reporting process, and encourage a zero-tolerance approach to hate crimes.
I think this may come as some surprise to Winchester residents. It's called Bus Revamp Up for an Award. Hampshire County Council is up for a national award for its role in the redevelopment of Winchester Bus Station. The project has been named as one of six finalists in the industry's Bus Awards in the Making Buses a Better Choice category. The award is given annually to a project which adds value to bus services. Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport at the County Council, said, "This was a major project involving many partners, and we undertook thorough public consultation over the changes. We had to carefully balance protecting the unique character of the city while maintaining transport access and enhancing Winchester's role as a major centre for services, shopping and employment. This national recognition for the project reinforces the value of our collaborative approach to planning for the future." The project was delivered in partnership with Winchester City Council, the EM3 Local Enterprise Partnership, local and national bus and coach operators, and traffic, highways and tourism specialists.
And now jails unprepared for more OAPs. The prison service and local authorities are failing to plan for a rise in elderly, ill and frail inmates, a new report warns. Many older jails, such as Winchester, are ill-equipped for prisoners in wheelchairs or with mobility problems, the assessment by two watchdogs found. HM Inspectorate of Prisons and the Care Quality Commission flagged up concerns about a lack of support overnight, with some inmates unable to get help after falling. A postcode lottery has developed where prisoners can receive varying service according to the Joint Review of Social Care in Prisons. It said the increasing jail population, coupled with longer sentences and sentences being given for historic offences, have contributed to its reshaping. In December 2017, the numbers in prison aged 50 and over was 13,522, 16% of the total adult prison population. Projections indicate that the numbers aged 50 and over held in custodial settings is likely to increase. The report said, "We are not convinced that there is adequate consideration of what will be required in the very near future, such as the obvious needs that will flow from the projected growth in the older prisoner population. This, in our view, represents a serious and obvious defect in strategic planning." The Inspectorate of Prisons and Care Quality Commission noted that there have been some improvements in care for older and disabled prisoners since the introduction of new legislation. And this is accompanied by a picture of our very ageing prison with its tower, which dominates the skyline of Winchester from a distance.
MP concerns over airport. And there's a photograph of Steve Brine meeting the new airport boss, Neil Garwood. Winchester MP Steve Brine has warned against Winchester being sidelined as Southampton Airport consults on a new master plan for the next 20 years to extend the runway and improve the passenger terminal. Mr. Brine is aware of the fears of residents in the south of his constituency that noise reduction procedures may be inadequate and that Eastleigh Borough Council is not duty-bound to address concerns of adjacent councils, such as Winchester. He said, "I want this to be an opportunity for residents across Otterbourne and the wider Downlands district to be able to have meaningful input as the airport, which is undoubtedly very important for our local economy, looks to develop. The airport has engaged well and I know genuinely wants to work with all local MPs, but Eastleigh must involve its neighbours on matters like impact, cross-border, unlike we've seen with the current local plan process, because we must avoid a repeat of last time the airport expanded, when the views of Winchester were sidelined. Now, the deadline for comments on the master plan is Tuesday, October the 30th.
Council homes hailed for care. Four Hampshire care homes have received prestigious recognition for their end-of-life care. West Home in Winchester, Fleming House in Eastleigh, Emsworth House in Emsworth and Malmesbury Lawn in Havant received the highest industry accolade. The four homes achieved platinum accreditation with the gold standards framework recognised by organisations such as the Care Quality Commission and the Royal College of General Practitioners. Councillor Liz Fairhurst, Hampshire County Council's Adult Social Care Chief, said, "There is nothing more important than ensuring a person is cared for with compassion and humanity at the end of their life. In our world, we talk about supporting a person to die well, ensuring they're cared for in the way in which they and their family would prefer. The fact that four of our homes have been re-accredited is testament to the hard work, skill and kindness of our staff."
And now Boaz Fitness Fun Day. The second Billy Boaz Family Fun and Fitness Day took place at the beautiful Hill Farm near Sutton Scotney. Test Valley Mayor Ian Carr opened the day and led the trail walk around fields and woods before setting off the runners. Roman Scout Troop from Winchester mucked in, along with volunteers from across the region. The air was filled with music from the impressive Riverside Concert Band, interspersed with drumming from Have A Go workshops provided by SoCo Music Project from Southampton. Friends from Barton Stacey barbecued up a storm and supporters donated homemade cakes with coffee thanks to Mozzo Coffee Roasters. Boaz is all about working and learning together, tackling things you never thought you could manage, says manager Stuart. It is a place where you can be yourself, be accepted as you are, and be surrounded by people who care. That's why many of our volunteers have been coming not just for a few weeks, but for many years. Funds and awareness were raised for the Boaz Project, which brings together volunteers and adults with learning difficulties to work on a horticulturally based site. To get involved, call Stuart on 07971 688838, and that's the www.boazproject.co.uk. And there are photographs of the Roman Scout Troop completing the walk and the mayor setting off with Billy Boaz trail walkers on what looks like a beautiful sunny day.
Walking the Alps on the railway. The Watercress Line is inviting families to dust off their walking boots to raise funds to preserve an important part of the Heritage Railway when its annual sponsored Walk the Line returns on November the 10th. There are three lengths of walk, 3, 6 and 10 miles. The 3 mile family stroll starts with a free vintage bus ride from Alsford to Ropley. From Ropley, families then walk back to Alsford. The 6 mile downhill runs from Medstead and Foremark station to Alsford. The 10 mile walk from Alton station over the Alps to Alsford offers a more challenging route. And there's a wonderful photograph of a section of the Alsford line and how the trees and the nature has just taken over the verges. It's really enticing. Each walk offers families the opportunity to experience the railway from a completely different view. Jason Holders, General Manager at the Watercross Line, said, Walk the Line is a fantastic opportunity for all the family to see the watercress line from a different view and play an important part in securing the future of Hampshire's heritage railways. Money raised will be used to re-ballast a section of 1,000 yards of track at Wander's Curve between Medstead, Four Marks and Ropley, and subsequently maintain the track bed that families will be walking along. Walkers aged 16 and above are expected to raise a minimum of £10 sponsorship or be willing to make a donation of at least that amount. Walkers under 16 are encouraged to raise sponsorship, but it is not expected. They must, however, be accompanied by somebody over the age of 16. All walks begin between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. Trains will not be running.
Rebel councillor complaint upheld. A rebel councillor breached the City Council's code of conduct when he called for the then chief executive to resign. A panel has ruled. However, the majority of complaints relating to Winchester City Councillor Kim Gottlieb's actions after the initial Silver Hill scheme collapsed were not upheld by the authorities' standings committee. It comes after the former Conservative made the demand of the then Chief Executive Simon Eden in 2015 in a statement made to the Chronicle's sister newspaper, The Daily Echo. As previously reported, High Court Judge Mrs. Justice Lang ruled that Winchester City Council had acted unlawfully over its handling of the regeneration scheme following a legal challenge by Councillor Gottlieb. Following that, he said then-leader Rob Humby, deputy leader Victoria Weston and the corporate director Steve Tilbury, as well as Mr. Eden, should immediately leave the council. The ruling said, issuing press statement imputing the conduct of individual officers by calling for their resignation was not valuing your colleagues and officers and engaging with them in an appropriate manner, because the officers were not able to respond publicly to criticism. Furthermore, and for the same reason, it constituted a failure to treat all people with respect and propriety. Following the decision, Councillor Gottlieb said, "I'm delighted that the Standards Committee cleared me on 5 of the 6 charges. All 6 charges related to statements I made about the conduct of officers in relation to Silver Hill. A finding that the statement I made on the day that the judicial review judgment was issued, February the 11th, 2015, was a breach is inconsistent with the committee's other findings, and it fails to explain why my lawful right to freedom of speech did not apply." Councillor Gottlieb also branded the investigation process as perverse. He said, "The council has never formally apologised for its conduct, yet it has pursued me for trying to hold to account those I believed responsible for the council's erroneous ways. I wouldn't, however, criticise the Standards Committee, as they were put in a very difficult position by the council, which carried out what I believe was an inept and biased process. The fact that it has been dragged out for 2.5 years has been politically convenient for those who have not appreciated my speaking out about Silver Hill over the years, or more recently, about other major projects, including Station Approach and Bar End, Sports and Leisure Centre. It would be a terrible thing if any other councillor felt unable to speak out about matters of public concern for fear of being complained about. Democracy, even at local level, faces too many threats as it is. The finding of a breach of the code of conduct has opened a legal challenge, but the complaints process has already involved an obscene waste of public money, not accounting my costs and my stress, and just now I'd rather focus on getting Silver Hill moving forwards in the right way." Following the decision by the committee, Councillor Gottlieb has been told he must attend a training session on the Code of Conduct and Member-Officer Relations by the end of February 2019.
And Henry Beaufort rocking out in school musical show. Henry Beaufort School students kicked off the 3-day run of their annual production on Tuesday with a sell-out audience. The 60-strong cast from most years at the school in Hairstock had worked for months to prepare We Will Rock You, one of the school's biggest shows to date. There are more than 40 working backstage. More than £1,000 worth of rigging and lighting makes up the set, providing 4 performance spaces to create different settings within the narrative. A live band is playing all the music made up of past and present students. Kim Miles, show director, said, "We began auditions in April and received a lot of interest. Those who turned up ranged across the year groups from year 8 to year 11. We Will Rock You has certainly created a theatre community in the school due to the different ages. We've had our sports hall converted by a parent of the school who has donated all of the rigging and it looks great. We even have official theatre drapes that really help with the acoustics. The show was a great example of how important arts and drama is to the school, even in times of academic focus and hard work. The story is set on iPlanet, once called Earth, where all musical instruments are banned to the public. The time is the future and globalisation is complete. Everywhere the kids watch the same movies, wear the same fashions and think the same thoughts. It's a safe, happy world, but not for the rebels who want to rock. With all of the hits from Freddie Mercury's Queen, We Will Rock You, follows a young man named Galileo, who is running from the police and joins forces with the Bohemian rebels." And this is accompanied by a photograph of an enormous group of very happy, celebrating students from the school, all with their arms in their air and dressed in appropriate costumes, singing, I imagine, We Will Rock You.
Council is to bring back water fountains. Free-to-use public watering fountains could be installed in Winchester after the City Council announced they are keen to reduce litter and plastic consumption. The City Council is planning to introduce free drinking water fountains to enable residents and visitors to drink or refill bottles whilst in the city. Possible locations for the fountains currently include Abbey Gardens, Middlebrook Street and the Cattle Market. The council will also be working with Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, to encourage food and drink premises to consider allowing members of the public to refill their water bottles. Councillor Jan Warwick, the portfolio holder for Environment, said, "I am pleased with Winchester City Council that it's taking a leading role in this popular initiative."
Villagers defeat pub plans but warn the war may not be won. Villagers have won their battle to save the local pub from allegedly harmful development. Councillors voted down a plan to develop the Purefoy Arms in Preston, Candover, north of Alresford. Red Oak Taverns had applied for permission to convert outbuildings into two separate residential properties for sale. The pub would still operate, but campaigners feared it would harm its long-term viability and lead to its eventual closure. The development would have taken a chunk of the pub garden. Johnny Maritz, who led the campaign, said, "We have won the battle, but the war may not be won. Red Oak may appeal, but for now, let's enjoy this moment." Basingstoke and Dean Borough councillors voted unanimously to refuse the planning application at a meeting last Wednesday after the Chronicle had gone to press. The committee had been recommended by its planning officers to approve the plans. The pub closed last October, but reopened in May with a new tenant, Gordon Stott. Mr. Marriott said, "We had hoped the investment and the tenancy that Gordon had secured would indicate a change in direction from them, and they had changed their strategy for the Purefoy, and would be satisfied for it to be run as a successful pub and restaurant." Mark Grunell, Red Oak director, said, "Having attended the planning hearing personally, I heard the concerns raised by the community and fully understand their position. Whilst I think it is unlikely that we will appeal, we have yet to make any firm decision."
And here we have Apple Day has strong app appeal. Sorry about that. Dozens of people flocked to a Hampshire market town to take part in a popular Apple Day. The event was held at St John's Church in Alresford for the first time on Saturday, having previously been held at Albury Park. Residents of all ages had the opportunity to get involved in several activities, including crushing and pressing apples and producing apple juice. Children had fun decorating apples, while adults had the chance to enjoy live entertainment and performances throughout the day. Many other activities included face painting, glitter tattoos, games and competitions were also run. Meanwhile, St John's Cafe served drinks, including, of course, apple juice, cakes and apple-based delights. The idea behind the event is to celebrate the apple, the UK's most popular indigenous fruit. And this is accompanied by a lot of really delightful photographs from the, oh, again, this is a bit of apology, the Appalachian Dance Group inside St John's Church, obviously chosen for their name, wearing purple, brightly purple dresses and lovely colourful waistcoats. And an apple cart competition won by two little girls called Marina and Eliza Emerson, who have made an enormous apple cover to their cart. Joe Jr. from Cider, who is obviously serving some cider to sell. And a selection of delightful apples decorated by children with little legs and currants for eyes and little sticks for eyebrows and lots of sprinkly spaghetti for hair. And obviously there's been a delightful competition for these decorated apples. There's a nice looking banana mouth smiling on one of them. Really lovely photos.
A happy item to finish on. That does conclude the extracts for this week of the week ending the 19th of October 2018. Thank you to our editors, Sheila Shepherd, Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Jean Gardner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have a very enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label at the front of the wallet too and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.